It should be conducted in a friendly spirit. Some of you mistake debate for full contact social studies. Now, it is not. It is not. Debate is not a sport. We do not hit. We have some notion that intimidation is good. This is what goes on in the hall after a debate round. If you lost, it's everybody else's fault. Why? Because you want to remain intimidated. If everyone knew your true nature and how truly brilliant you were, some of you will become great superstars. And you will somehow understand that to me, you can only talk to other people and socialize with other people who are in your win-loss bracket. What is that about? That is not what this is about. This is about community. And, fortunately or not, one of the lessons we have to learn is that we are with a partner. We have to love that partner while we debate. And we have to project our air of appreciation for their presence. Because, you see, there has to be a partner in policy debate in college. It's just a rule. It's not done. Just do it Lincoln Douglas style. So, we have to get along with one another. And we present our credibility by being nice. The best thing you can do is to kill with kindness, not with meanness. And those of you who stand up and are just jerks and cross eggs, I'm telling you, every judge who judges you is thinking, now you become arrogant, this little naughty kid. And they would like to. And any mistake you make, they will be closely scrutinizing every moment of your speeches. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with being nice. Why, and answering questions openly, and they're thinking, wow, this is a bear, they're not really trying to be that whole jerk intimidating thing. You see, that just doesn't work very well. It just doesn't work, any more than you have friends who are like that. Why would you want to hang out with somebody like that? Well, debating against somebody like that does not instill terror in you. It instills irritation, and that reduces credibility. Next suggestion. Be in control of the cross-examination period. Be in control of the cross-examination period. Now, being in control means a host of things. Number one, it means to be in control verbally of the cross-examination period. You're asking questions. You've got Chad and Charlie here. Thank you. Your answer is sufficient. Excuse me, I've got another question I really need to ask. I am so nice and you are such a jerk. Hey, you know, listen, I got to ask another question. Now, they keep talking. They're just digging their own grave with the judge. They are obstructing the communication process in the debate. They are preventing you from maximizing your argument. Be nice about it. Don't turn it over. Shut up! that just gets you at the same level they are. Be nice. Thank you. Your answer is sufficient. Simple little phrase. Doesn't take much time. If they keep talking, no, thank you. That's enough. I've got another question. I've got to get to these questions. All right? You're telling the judge, I'm trying to get information to make a good debate. This person over here just doesn't know how to control themselves. Suggestion related to this is controlling the debate situation physically. Controlling it physically. And for this one, I need some assistance. How about you? Right here, white shirt, third row. Would you come help me for a minute? No, not Eric. The lady in front of you. Eric, if you haven't already seen this, I need somebody to help me. Okay, now, we're about to have cross-examination here, and I'm thinking, she's so young, I'm going to be a piece of cake. And so I ask her a question, and lo and behold, she's making sense. In fact, she's articulate, she's using evidence, she's citing it to build credibility, and I'm sitting here thinking, well, I probably misjudged the situation. And so what am I doing? I'm thoughtfully coming, listening to her answer, and what have I done to her? I have upstaged her. Now, if I moved over, I'd eclipse her. All I have done is upstaged her. Now, if she's together on what's happening here, she's going to do what? She's coming up here to join me. And as I ask my next question, what am I doing with your attention? Am I bringing it back with me? And what will she do if I ask the question and she begins her answer? She will come back and take that attention with you. Now, we could cha-cha like this, we could do all kinds of things. There's other control issues that are going on in a conversation. And one of those is that we, as Americans, for the most part of this culture, have a certain inviolable body space around us. We don't like people in there that have not been invited. Now, in this situation, it's compounded by the fact that women over 40 absolutely have cooties. You know, you're great at it. But do you see what I'm saying? The questioner has control of the cross-examination, period. They have psychological control. They can also have physical control. You're a great support. Thank you. Give her a round of applause. Now, I don't want you to go home and say, oh, yeah, Melissa taught me how to run people off stage, back into the desk, and all their evidence fell off. It was great. Everybody's you know, you get burned after doing lectures for a while. I quote you all the time. All right, question number 7. Don't repeat answers unless you want them emphasized. This is the classic beginner error. Don't repeat answers unless you want them emphasized. Classic beginner error. So the observation talks about the nature of Iraq, is that right? Right. And the fact that Iraq and the United States don't get along, right? Right. And the first card says this, yes, yes. And the second card, blah, blah, blah. What are you doing? You're just going down repeating all this stuff. You're not making any ground at all. You're not clarifying anything. You're giving them a chance to rewrite the judge's flow and make it fully understandable. Judge Younger says that if a jury hears something once, they might or might not believe it. If they hear something twice, they're more likely to believe it. If they hear something 3 times, they will probably believe it. So it's not just that it's not making ground. It can also be counterproductive in terms of advancing the opportunity for their eloquence on their position. Suggestion number 8. Avoid "isn't it a fact" form of cross-examination. Now, I know every lawyer on television uses it. Please avoid "isn't it a fact." Is that a fact you killed your wife? Yes, I killed my wife, and her lasagna was brutal. Someone had to do it. It was a mercy killing. On television, they just crack under the slightest of pressure. This does not happen. Remember, your partner, your opponent, is an egomaniac. If you say "isn't it a fact," they'll go, "no," even if it's in their benefit, even if it's to their benefit, in their best interest. Avoid that form of cross-examination. Suggestion number 8, and this is just terribly important. Attack evidence. Expose the weakest portions of the case. This is your opportunity to reduce the credibility of their claim. Arguments are composed of 2 facts or 2 features, claim and warrant for the claim. The foundation of argument is evidence. If you can destroy or question or reduce the credibility of their evidence, you have reduced the credibility of their claim. Attack evidence. Especially at the first of the year, people can't defend their evidence. They can read it 90 miles an hour, but they can't defend it. And when you're sitting here in week 2 at this institute, and each one of you has 2,000 cards that are hardly filed, they're on little pieces of paper and envelopes, and you really plan to get those slots in on time, and you're in a practice debate, you can't defend that stuff. Half of it came from other people. Unless you read the books yourself and put the block together yourself, you don't usually know the assumptions of those arguments. As the season progresses, you find the arguments you really find strategically high mileage for you, you will go back and read the original articles. You should never run an affirmative you haven't read all the articles for, and I mean the 1A and the 2A. You have to be able to defend those positions in cross-examination. And it raises your credibility to be able to defend the assumptions of the authors. Kate's lecture yesterday, hello. What assumptions do your authors make about international relations? What assumptions do they make about truth in the way war and peace are conducted? What assumptions do they make about colonizing difference? There's a large body of literature that suggests that peace processes inevitably produce war because they require the threat of war to stay in force. What assumptions does the author use? What methodology does the author use to draw their conclusion? Not just the assumptions underlying their argument, how does the methodology, that method they use to derive their conclusion, whether it is a statistical study, whether it is a historical study, regardless of the type of warrants or claims that are made by the evidence, what methods do the authors use to derive their conclusion? Usually the assumptions dictate the method. Assumptions dictate the method used. If I am a high school teacher and I want to get a bigger raise, I'm going to use that methodological, statistical form that will get me the best argument for why I need a raise. Well, the average teacher salary in the state is X, and I will find a statistical method that will make that low so it looks like I need more money. The assumptions of the authors dictate the methods they use to get their conclusions. And folks, if you're on the negative, you can defeat people on this topic, on solvency, and the place to set that up is cross-examination and reduce their credibility. Suggestion number 9. Ask simple questions. Ask them one at a time. Ask simple questions. Ask them one at a time. This is not a good question. What methodological assumptions did your author make about normative international relations theory, and how does that apply to recent Iraqi air raids, and how these assumptions affect the Middle East peace process? The witness will go, huh? Would you please repeat those one at a time? And will you define the terms you're using? Because I'm not really sure what you're talking about. What is the normative international relations theory to you? Do you see how questions like that, that are really complex and loaded with terms, invite a witness to be able to filibuster, and the judge will applaud the filibuster because the question was so inherent. Suggestion number 10. Don't ask questions of the partner of the witness. We call this tag team debating. Now look, and this operates on the other side too. Witnesses shouldn't hijack, their partner shouldn't hijack their cross-examination. And let me tell you something, folks. And see, the emphasis with which that young lady put her pin down and looked at her partner suggested that this had perhaps been a problem on their team. I'm telling you, it's a problem on everybody's team. And it operates out of straight ego. I want to look good in front of the judge. My partner is trying to give the farm away, and I'm going to save this debate. Or if you're on the negative, the two in, well, they're of course a sysad specialist, so we've got to ask them, hello. If your partner's going for the same glass of argument in every debate, you should learn it so that you can answer intelligently the questions, because that makes you both look sharp. Or if the one goes, your credibility with the judge. You love your partner. And preparation means knowing about each other's been done. That's too hard. There's so much research to do. You all are going to pick one or at most two affirmatives, and you're going to run them all here. Now, both of you should know them. And both of you should have read the solvency argument. And whatever this act of your team, you go for the most, whatever your big generic positions are, both of you should know them. Because on this topic, you can undo each other. And you've got to make sure that your arguments are consistent and don't self-destruct. You got to tag team sometimes if it's going to lose you the debate. If they stand up, if the partner stands up and is just saying something so outrageous, why, yes, our solvency authors were all recent mental patients. You know, you got to do something in that case. But folks, it needs to be that extreme. And let me tell you something else. As we become more sensitive to difference, let me also tell you that probably the most common thing that happens is that men hijack the cross-examination of women. And women let them. You are both at fault. Men immediately assume because their job is to interrupt. You see, they have been raised to interrupt, ladies, and they have been raised to assert. They were born, their father held them in their arms and said, yes, you will be in charge, you are a white male, we will start this out. And ladies, oh, you're a girl, you will love people, hello. Now, I'm telling you this happens, and most of the time the boys don't realize it, and the women don't realize they're letting them do it, because you see, it is women's job to make everyone happy. And it is men's job to go shoulder the hard stuff. Okay? Get over it. It reduces your credibility. It reduces your credibility. Suggestions to the witness. Boy, you're in trouble. You don't know what questions they're going to ask. They do. They know what they're trying to set up. You don't. You start off at a disadvantage. Suggestion number one, absolutely the most important. Don't be afraid to say, I don't know. Don't be afraid to say, I don't know. They probably know the answers to the questions they're asking. They probably know. If you try to bluff your way out of it, you will likely be busted. This will cut against every part of you. Not only because you are adolescents and it is your job to ferret out adult hypocrisy, it's a terrible job and somebody's got to do it, but you're also a smart adolescent. And you're not used to not knowing things, and somehow an admission that you don't know something is just awful. It's just awful. You're standing in your kitchen, your father has baked a cake for the charity, something bizarre, and you walk in and you can't help yourself. And you take your hand and you grab a piece, a handful of the chocolate cake, and you put it in your mouth and there are crumbs coming down your face and you hear your father coming in the door. And it surprises you and you go, oh, right on your white t-shirt and you have this chocolate hand with crumbs coming down your face, cake destroyed, father, what have you done? Nothing. Nothing. It wasn't me, it was Bird, my brother. Why? He shoved my hand in that cake and he did that and he just went out for us. If you don't learn to say it, and I would like you to practice it tonight 5 times, just look at her, I don't know. I don't know. It's a whole lot better than faking it, getting busted, and losing the debate before the first cross episode. Suggestion number 2, be nice. Be nice. Don't get down in the mud with them. Remember, fill with kindness. All right, I got 14 questions. You got to answer yes or no. Well, I would prefer not to. Just answer yes or no, because you know, debate is a complex thing. Yes, yes or no. Well, okay, I'll try, but I don't, you know if I can. All right. Suggestion number 3. We've only got 6. We can get through this. Be constantly on guard for traps they're setting. Be constantly on guard for traps they're setting. Why do they care so much about how much it costs? Why are they going through every funding mechanism in the plan? Why do they care so much? You've got 14 answers on funding. Do they have something you haven't thought about? Constantly be on guard. Suggestion 4, don't question the questioner. All right, well, on your solvency point here, the Campbell evidence says blah, 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 and it seems to be terribly incomplete. Well, what about your card on the third thing, and then you reverse roll? You end up looking stupid. Don't do it. Don't question the question. Resist the urge. It's not going to look slick in the end. Suggestion number 5, answer in a straightforward manner. Don't filibuster. Answer in a straightforward manner. Don't filibuster. This is almost impossible to do. You do not want to give the farm away on your affirmative. Well, what is the effect of your affirmative on relations with Iran? Well, Iran is a very large country. Well, I realize that it is a neighbor of Iraq. They have a long history, and to start going into that history, see, that's your temptation. And there's some people who can do that, and they're brilliant at it, and they can retain credibility. had a debater named Unjin Sun. This kid has never answered a cross-examination question in his entire life, but he made you look stupid for even asking him. But there are very few people who can do that in cross-examination. You need to answer in straightforward a manner as you can. If you know the hard questions are coming, plan a couple of short, concise sentences that sound like you answered the question. That sound like you answered. Then when they probe further, repeat the sentences. Then when they probe further, go, oh, I'm starting to understand your question now. And, you know, some people have this down to an art form. Wherever you can answer in a straightforward way, you are going to pick up the undying admiration of the judge. Do it. Last suggestion you've really already gone through, and that's not hijacking your partner's cross-examination. And that happens all the time with the witness. One partner will eclipse another and answer, and it always makes the person who is supposed to be the witness look bad. Always makes them look bad. Enjoy your meal. I will see you tomorrow.